Okay, so you've handed us a really interesting collection of commercial real estate news this time, all from mid-April 2025.
Yeah, quite a snapshot.
And as I'm looking through it, the big picture that emerges for me is one of a market that's definitely, well, it's in flux.
Flux is a good word. Dynamic, maybe even a bit uncertain.
Dynamic feels like an understatement, right? There's a real sense of things shifting, retail, office spaces, even how lending is
And
happening.
all against this backdrop of, potential tariff changes and these inflation worries that just won't quit.
Exactly. So our mission here, I guess, is to try and pull out the crucial bits, connect these dots.
And hopefully give you, the listener, a clearer picture of what's actually going on and, importantly, why it matters.
Right. Okay, let's dive in. Starting with retail, it's always so visible.
Good place to start.
What really jumped out at me was this contrast, In the department store world, you've got the ongoing story, Macy's, JCPenney, closing stores. We've seen that for a while.
Yeah, that's not exactly new news.
But then you have Boscov's, this chain from Pennsylvania. They're actually going the other way.
Right, expanding. Opening their 51st store, is it? Up near Rochester, New York.
Yeah, the mall at Grease Ridge. And creating 250 jobs, that feels like a pretty significant statement when so many others are pulling back.
It really is. And it makes you wonder, what are they doing differently? What's their strategy?
Well, the articles point to a few things. First, this real emphasis on actual customer service on the floor.
With a large staff, right? They mentioned hiring over 100 experienced people just for this new location.
Yeah, which signals a real belief in that, human touch in retail.
In an age where everything is pushing online, that commitment to the in-store experience, it could be a key differentiator. Maybe it shows that focusing on that physical experience can still work.
Totally. And it seems like they're not afraid to lean into some of that older retail charm either. Like they kept their candy
I
section.
saw that. Apparently, it's a genuine draw for people. Bit of nostalgia, maybe.
Could be. Plus, being smaller, private, family-owned, it seems to give them more agility. They can micro-target their marketing locally.
That nimbleness is huge. And that local focus really shows up in things like their sports apparel sections.
Oh, yeah.
The article mentioned their Deptford Mall store, stocking specific gear for Philly teams, Penn State, Temple, Villanova, Penns, even local high schools.
Ah, so really embedding themselves in the community. That builds loyalty.
Exactly. Deep local connection. And it seems to be paying off. They had that bankruptcy back in 08.
Right, I remember reading about that.
But they seem to have turned it around by focusing on these core suburban markets, and they strategically offloaded some smaller spots owned by Macy's.
Smart. And now they're doing what, $1.2 billion across 50 stores? Seems like they found their niche.
They really seem to have. But it's important, like you said, to contrast this with the wider picture.
For sure. Because while Boscar's is expanding,
The broader retail landscape is still facing some pretty big headwinds. We're still seeing those high-profile bankruptcies, store closures, Party City, Joann, Big Lots, Rite Aid. The list goes on.
Yeah, it paints a picture of a really uneven playing field out there.
Definitely. And it's pushing landlords, forcing them to adapt.
We're seeing reports they have to offer more concessions now. What does that mean exactly? Like lower rent?
Yeah, things like that, lower initial rent, maybe rent-free periods to start, help with build-out costs, basically sweetening the deal to get tenants in the door. Some are even splitting up those big empty boxes, the old department store spaces, for smaller places like quick service restaurants.
Or turning old banks into clinics. I saw that mentioned too.
Exactly. It just shows how much that traditional retail model is being, shaken up.
It really does. But even in that struggling group, there are maybe some glimmers of hope, like Big Lots.
Right. They're apparently on the comeback trail, reopening 9 stores in the South.
Part of a bigger plan, right? Like 55 stores by early June.
Yeah, something like that. And this is after their bankruptcy in 2024. So getting new financing, reinvesting in physical stores, that's significant.
It suggests bankruptcy isn't always the final chapter.
Not at all. We're seeing Variety Wholesalers, too. They own Roses. Super 10 also reopening stores after their restructuring.
So maybe a chance for a reset if they fix the underlying problems.
Potentially, yeah. And then you look at the giants, like Walmart. They're not pulling back from physical stores, are they?
No, that deal with Sign Value for digital billboards at thousands of
It's
stores,
over 5,000, yeah.
that's a clear investment in keeping those physical spaces relevant, engaging customers while they're actually there.
Contrast that, though, with the Children's Place.
Okay, what do they do?
They seem to be going smaller, focusing on smaller store formats, sometimes putting them right next to Gymboree locations.
Ah, like a side-by-side strategy.
Mm-hmm. And this is after they cut down their total store count quite a bit.
Yeah.
And they're pushing that premium quality angle for Gymboree.
So kind of carving out a more specific niche, maybe?
Feels like it.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah, you've got expansion, attempted comebacks, and then this kind of strategic retrenching. Lots of different plays happening.
Definitely not a one-size-fits-all situation in retail.
Not even close. Now, one result of all this churn is more empty storefronts.
Yeah, and it seems like old bank branches are a growing part of that problem.
Makes sense, with digital banking taking over. The article said it takes, what, 6 to 12 months on average to lease out a vacant bank space.
That's a long time for a space to sit empty.
It is. And it's leading to some, well, interesting potential policy ideas, like this California proposal, Senate Bill 789.
Right. The idea to tax landlords for vacant storefronts, like $5 per square foot per year if it's empty for more than half the year.
Yeah, 182 days or more.
Okay, so the goal is pretty clear. Push landlords to fill those spaces, reduce blight, maybe raise some funds for things like housing.
That's the argument for it.
Yeah.
But there are definitely counter arguments.
Like penalizing landlords for things maybe outside their control, market downturns, or just legitimately needing time to find the right tenant, not just any tenant.
Exactly. And the concern that landlords might just pass that tax cost onto their existing tenants in other properties through higher rents.
Which doesn't really solve the vacancy problem, does it?
Not directly. And didn't San Francisco try something similar already?
Yeah, the article mentions that, a vacancy tax that apparently didn't have a huge impact.
So these kinds of policies, even if they sound good, can have complex results. Depends a lot on the local market.
It's a tough balance, revitalizing areas without hurting property owners unfairly. And speaking of struggling areas, that contest in San Francisco.
Yeah, for ideas to fix up Market Street.
It sounds like despite past efforts banning cars, tax breaks, they're still dealing with high vacancies, low foot traffic.
It really highlights that fixing these areas isn't just about the buildings themselves. It's tied to the whole economic vibe, you know?
Yeah, attracting businesses, shoppers. It's a bigger challenge, especially with changing habits.
Which brings us neatly to those broader economic factors hanging over everything.
Right. This article, Cooling Inflation Offers Cold Comfort for Uncertain Consumers, it says the CPI actually fell slightly in March. First drop since May 2020.
Yeah, a tiny dip, minus 0.1%. On the surface, sounds like good news.
What?
But the article points out it's not really boosting confidence. People still expect high inflation, according to those surveys from University of Michigan and the New York Fed.
Okay.
And there are still big worries about tariffs, how they might hit spending down the road.
So even if the official number dips, the feeling out there is still uncertain.
Pretty much. And it's not just consumers. The producer price index, the PPI.
That tracks costs for businesses.
Right. It shows input costs are still rising, which could eventually mean, you know, higher prices for us anyway.
And the article mentions construction firms specifically seeing higher costs.
Which feeds right back into commercial real estate. Makes new builds, big renovations more expensive, potentially causing delays.
Okay, so you've got inflation worries, tariff uncertainty, and that connects to Prologis, the big industrial player.
Exactly. They're reportedly cutting back on some growth plans, specifically citing trade policy uncertainty.
Wow. So that uncertainty isn't just talk. It's actually affecting major investment decisions.
Seems like it. Tariffs remain this big question mark.
Yeah, there's another piece here just on the impact of Trump's tariffs on U.S. manufacturing. Kind of complex, right? Some suspended, but maybe more action later.
Total uncertainty for businesses trying to plan long term. And there's no consensus on whether they even help or hurt manufacturing overall.
Some companies holding back investment because they just don't know what's coming.
Makes sense. But the flip side is, if tariffs do encourage more domestic production,
then you need more industrial space, warehouses, factories.
Precisely. And it sounds like Prologis, despite being cautious overall, is still seeing pretty strong demand from tenants.
So maybe linked to companies thinking about reshoring or nearshoring?
Could be part of it. Fundamental need for logistics space seems strong, even with the broader caution.
Okay, let's pivot to office space. That's been such a huge story since the pandemic.
Definitely.
We've got an article saying office attendance nears post-pandemic high. Average around 54%, maybe a bit higher in places like Chicago, Houston, Dallas, Austin.
Yeah, seeing higher rates in some of those Sunbelt cities, it seems.
And it feels like more companies are pushing for more in-office time. Amazon, Starbucks, AT&T, Dell. all mentioned as increasing requirements.
That's definitely the trend. A gradual pushback towards the office, which could mean demand for office space starts to stabilize, maybe even tick up in some markets.
But then there's the cost issue again. That piece on construction materials costs climb. A 9.7% annualized jump in the first quarter.
Yeah, driven by lumber, steel, copper. That's significant.
Has to impact new office builds or major refits, right?
Absolutely. Higher costs can mean delays, cancellations, or just rethinking plans altogether.
So companies want people back, but building or upgrading the space is getting more expensive, creates tension.
Mm-hmm. And we even saw that Caterpillar is calling workers back 5 days a week. Seems like a broad push across different industries.
And it's not just private companies shaping the office market. The federal government's making big moves, too.
Oh, yeah.
Over 15 million square feet of federal property coming to the market. That's huge.
That is a massive amount of space. And the key detail seems to be where it's coming from.
Mostly lower quality buildings, like 2- and 3-star properties.
Yeah, a disproportionate share, which suggests landlords owning those types of buildings might feel the pain more vacancy, pressure on rents.
Especially in the D.C. area, where a lot of these cancellations are concentrated.
Right. Big impact, potentially, for that specific market segment.
And then there's this other twist. A new directive telling federal agencies to prioritize suburban locations for new office space.
Whoa, okay. That's a shift. Real estate pros look for signs of federal offices heading to suburbs.
It's basically reversing the old guidelines that favored downtowns.
That could really reshuffle the deck. The federal government is such a huge tenant, shifting demand out to the suburbs.
Could be a big boost for suburban office markets, maybe less so for some downtowns.
Potentially very significant. Could affect property values, vacancy rates, the whole nine yards in both areas.
Okay, so retail and office, lots of moving parts. What about the money side, lending, investment?
Well, there's an article, CRE lenders banking on deal momentum. Sounds like lenders are feeling a bit more optimistic.
Why is that?
Seems driven by more deals actually happening late last year and early this year. More transaction activity.
Okay, so maybe the logjam is breaking a little.
Seems like it. And the article mentions credit is available. Lenders are competing. Those are generally positive signs for market health. Capitals are flowing.
And that positive feeling extends to multifamily, too. Multifamily buyer and seller sentiment improves in Q1.
Yeah, a slight uptick in sentiment for both buyers and sellers for core and value-add properties.
Although concerns about interest rates are still there, it says.
Oh, absolutely. Rate volatility is still a big factor hanging over things. The piece probably digs into how IRR targets and cap rates are shifting in different markets.
Right, the financial metrics investors watch closely.
Yeah, and there's also a piece focusing on Freddie Mac's small balance loans, emphasizing how important smooth financing is for those smaller multifamily investors.
Crucial part of the housing market, those smaller landlords.
Definitely. So, yeah, pockets of optimism in lending and multifamily, even with caution elsewhere, shows how segmented the market is.
It really does. And finally, just to add one more interesting wrinkle.
Let me guess, the pickleball courts.
You saw too. Why new warehouses include pickleball courts and food halls?
Uh-huh. Yeah. It really shows how even industrial real estate is changing.
Trying to attract and keep tenants by offering amenities, just like modern offices do.
Exactly. It's becoming a more competitive market, so landlords are thinking about the employee experience even in warehouses, making them more than just boxes.
Pickleball courts and warehouses, definitely a sign of the time.
It really is. Yeah. Reflects the need to make these places desirable work environments.
Well, after digging through all this, it's crystal clear, like you said at the start, the commercial real estate market right now is incredibly complex.
Deeply interconnected, too. You see resilience, like with Boscov's and retail.
But alongside those broader retail struggles and adaptations.
Right, and huge shifts in office space, driven by company policies and government moves.
And then cautious optimism in lending, despite those background worries about inflation and tariffs.
Mm-hmm. A real mix.
So as we wrap this up for you, the listener, here's something to maybe mull over. Considering all these different paths, retail, office, lending, industrial amenities.
Where might the unexpected opportunities pop up? Or the unexpected challenges, say, in the next year, year and a half?
Yeah. How does this complicated mix of consumer choices, government actions, and global economics actually play out on the ground in our local economies?
Definitely a lot to keep watching.